do the countdown. Oh, it started now. So the recording, so you'll send it to me, Dave, after, okay?
All right. We transfer.
All right. Yes, we transfer song. Countdown in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, everyone, and welcome. And we're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. And I'm excited to welcome the program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Got over my Omicron and my energy's coming back, and I'm in Southern California and it's sunny. It just doesn't get any better than that.
Exactly. And I have on as our guest today, Peter Klines. He is a New York Times bestselling author, author of Broken Room. How are you, Peter? Thanks for stopping by, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty good.
All right, so I'm going to just jump right into this because it's a mixture of horror. I hear Stranger Things. I'm liking when I hear Stranger Things because I love Stranger Things, to tell you the truth. But let's learn a little bit about you, your background as an author, and how that journey began. Because I think one of the things, everyone wants that New York Times best-selling author moniker. I think that if any author, if you went and asked them, you know, best-selling author would be their first thing, the New York Times would be the one that say, if I could say, I'm a New York Times bestselling author. So how did that journey begin as a writer?
And I add one more thing to that, Neil, too. Sell a million books.
Honestly, I have probably the absolute worst path anyone could follow to becoming a successful author. There's no rhyme or reason to it at all. I've, like a lot of people, you know, who write, I've wanted to write since I was a little kid. I've told stories since I was a little kid. But like for the longest time, it never occurred to me that this is something people could actually do for a living. So I always just thought it was like this weird side dream that I'd go be an aerospace engineer or something, and, or a high school teacher, and maybe just write stories when I could. But yeah, I actually, weirdly enough, got out of college with a degree I could not use at the time. Moved randomly to California from New England, ended up in the film industry, got out of the film industry, started writing about the film industry. And then somewhere in there transitioned just writing fiction full time. I sold my first novel to a small press, my first four novels to a small press. And then I got picked up by Random House, and my eighth book was the one that hit the New York Times bestseller list. Am I counting that right? I think I'm counting that right.
So you kept writing and your publisher was happy with you. And then your fans started to build up. Would you say fan base has a lot to do with it at times too?
Well, I mean,
building that fan.
I guess it's such a tough thing to say because it's possible to build your fan base with your first book. You know, you look at somebody, look at Andy Weir, for example. First book becomes a smash runaway hit. And he'd written novels before that, or I think he wrote a novel before that. And he wrote a very popular short story before that. But The Martian was just this, he came out of nowhere, as people like to say, even though he'd been writing for years. Mm. I, you know, went the other way. I just had like this very small buildup. I did not really have a breakout hit, I guess, in any way until my fourth novel, which was a horror adventure mystery thing called 14. But there is no one path. I wish I could really say it's, and I did this and became a New York Times bestselling author. I used the word melon baller three times.
So you can create that course, right? How to Become a New York Times Bestselling Author by Peter Klines.
No, anyone who is selling that course is lying to you.
And there is the course, but you could Google it right now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure there are a dozen courses like that. There are courses and webinars and how-to books, and they're all crap. Toss them.
So you're a New York Times bestselling author. Every author aspires to be that. I'm an author. I certainly am. I've got a book coming out. But a lot of mystery around what it takes. Does it take book sales? Does it take, you know, a popular political topic, or staying away from a negative political topic? I mean, what's your opinion?
I think, again, there is no one path. A friend of mine, I will be polite and not name them, but they're also New York Times bestselling author. And when they heard that they had hit the New York Times bestseller list, they were ecstatic because they were figuring like, oh my God, this book took off. I must have sold, you know, 500,000 copies. How many, was it 500,000? Was it 250,000? Was it 500,000? How many million did we sell? And like, you sold like 9,000. It was a slow week.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's just it though. It's honestly, it's best example. Do you remember there was a story at the start of the pandemic about these two guys who had made a short film and they rented out a theater and bought all the seats. And because of this, they were number one at the box office because nothing else was released that week. So they were the number one movie in America.
So they manipulated.
With one theater screen with like 80 seats, 100 seats, I think, something very small like that. But they were number one in America. It wasn't really manipulated. It's just that number one sort of depends on a lot of other factors. So I hit number four. But it was also a very weird week because I hit number four and my book had been out for like 3 months at that point.
Mm.
And then just randomly one week I hit number four on the New York Times bestseller list. The book ahead of me, I think was, crap, I just blanked, but it was another book that had like been out for a while. And I have no idea what happened.
So the perfect storm.
Yeah, it's just sometimes you can hit the New York Times bestseller list with a book that's selling like mad. Sometimes you hit it with, you know, just because it was a slow week, I guess, in my case. I have a friend who's written tons of original stuff that's amazing. And he hit the New York Times bestseller list with a movie adaptation he did.
Wow.
So I don't think there is anything. The thing I would always tell people really is don't worry about hitting the New York Times bestseller list. Don't worry about that. Don't try to make something or craft it for that purpose. Just write the best story you can. Write the story you want to tell. Agree. Because if you're writing a really good story that has a lot of heart behind it, has a lot of feeling behind it, that's what's going to connect with people. And then they'll buy your 4,000 copies if it's a slow week.
So is there a club for it now? Once you become a New York Times bestselling author, is there a club of people? Because not everyone reaches the...
If there is, I have not been invited to it.
You have a friend in it, but he's not telling you yet, right?
I've got a couple friends at this point who have, and it's still weirds me out, A, that I personally know a bunch of people in the New York Times bestselling list, and then I sort of stop and think, wait, I'm a person on who hit the New York Times bestsellers list, which is still bizarre to me.
Yeah.
When I see that in print or something, it makes no sense.
And I know a friend who's the New York Times number one bestselling author, but how does she make it? Well, Oprah just happened to endorse her book, you know?
Yeah. That's just it. It's so weird and so random. And I guess I always expected when I was like starting out, when I was a kid, that it would change everything, you know, that I'd have a gold plated car or something now that I'm just
like, or at least a pink Cadillac
or something. Yeah. You know, that you'd get a plaque or something.
Now you're going to get the license plate, right? New York Times bestseller.
It's a frame on it.
Exactly. All right. So let's talk about the book now. I mean, so is this a series or you've written eight books of, is it a series or is this just this book that we're talking about right now is more the first of a potential series?
I very, very, very rarely when I write a book think, could this be the start of a series? Because again, I think that's sort of like shooting yourself in the foot and asking for trouble. I know everyone says like, oh, but publishers want to see a series. My personal belief, and from talking with editors and stuff, what I think they want is they want to see a book with series potential. That they like this book, it's a good, solid book, but if you wanted to tell another story set in this world, another story with these characters, you could. I don't think they want you to send in your first novel and it has to be continued on the last page and you haven't answered anything. So all that said, I just wrote this book as a standalone. Like a lot of my books, there's a couple little weird Easter eggs in it, like hints to other things, but It is a mostly complete standalone. It is a complete standalone. You don't need to read any of my other books. I currently have no plans to write another book with these characters, but you know, never say never. If come release day, this book sells 10 million copies, I'm sure the publishers might have different opinions on if.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of where it is now. It was a story that popped in my head and I wanted to tell it. And I'd actually been telling my agent I was going to write a different book. And so when I turned this in, he got it and he was like, "What is this?" And I was like, "Just read it. Just read it. You'll like it."
So when you were younger, you said you like to write and all of that stuff. Were you writing fiction or were you telling true stories? And then when you had your job in the film industry and you were writing about that, was there fiction in that? Was it just all reality? How did this all start?
Well, when I was a little kid, it was mostly what I think we would today call fan fiction stuff. I mean, I started out, I was of the Star Wars generation. And yes. I would set up every night. I still remember this. My mom still remembers this. I would set up like little dioramas with all my Star Wars action figures. And every day, like every night before I went to bed, I would explain to her how everything had changed, that this guy had moved over here and this had happened and he saw him. And now this guy is running that way. And, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Very interested, of course.
Oh, my mom is a saint because she would listen to me go on and on, and none of this stuff has any interest to her. She is not a sci-fi fan. She's not, you know, into any of this. And she would sit there and nod and encourage me and tell me it was really good when I was writing this bizarre stuff that I think she had no clue, you know, what to make of it. And at one point I found she had this massive electric typewriter from when she'd been a student and like gone to finishing school. And I found this thing. And now I know I was writing real stories because they were typed. So, you know, I'm 9 using this massive typewriter. And it's one of those things where like you turn it on and it's like humming and shaking the whole desk.
Right.
You know, you could, you like hear the power up, like when you turn it on, it's like. Whoa, whoa,
whoa, whoa, you know. Were you a only child?
I was not. My brother and I are almost exact opposites. My brother is the sports nut. He's really into music. So we weren't doing much. He would be outside doing stuff and I would just be sitting at the desk typing away. So when I got into the film industry, that was actually a weird stumbling thing, but I was actually doing art stuff. I was a prop master for many years on a bunch of movies and TV shows.
Did you make up fiction stories during that time? Or
I tried to write scripts during it. I wrote scripts for a couple shows I was working on and tried to show them to the right people.
What shows did you work on?
I worked on probably the two biggest shows that people would know that I worked on. I worked on a USA show called Silk Stockings.
I know like, that show. I remember
it was
that
like
show.
A sexy police crime show.
Yeah.
That ran for 8 years. And I worked on that for about 3 years. I also worked on a show called Veronica Mars.
I've heard that too. Recent.
Yep. And probably the only other thing I worked on that people would really have heard of, if not watched probably deliberately, was a bad superhero show called Nightman.
Okay.
And if you didn't hear that, don't worry about it. You should feel very relieved that you've never heard of it.
I didn't. So there you go. So let's talk about, you know, what I'm always interested in is, you know, why horror? Why is horror, John, you're interested in horror?
I don't know if it's an interest. I think it's just the way I tell stories. I think I think a lot of people aren't so much interested in, like, believe it or not, I don't watch a lot of horror. Like I read horror novels, but I read a lot of other stuff too. I read comedy, I read sci-fi, I read mysteries. I'm a big Jack Reacher fan. But I don't know. I just, whenever I sit down, things almost invariably start spinning towards weird and creepy. And, you know, no matter how, I have tried again and again to just write, okay, I'm just gonna write a straight sci-fi novel. And whenever I do, just all this weird little darkness, creepy stuff starts leaking in. And I don't know. I guess it's partly just the way my brain's wired for telling stories, that this is the reaction I like getting from people. This is the, you know, it's the raw moments, I guess, that I like that stick with me and stuff. So
where do you find the time to read? You know, when you're not writing, do you read while you're writing? I mean, how much of your time is actually reading other people's stuff?
Fair amount. I mean, I try to read at least an hour or two every day.
Just because you love it, or you have a motive?
Because I love it. Well, I mean, it's 50-50. I also have like the stack of like, all right, I need to do a blurb for this person and a blurb for this person, and I'm helping this friend, you know, just skimming through their book and giving them notes because they've helped me out at times. And there's stuff I like, you know, there's stuff that, oh my God, look, they finally made a Bakuru Banzai novel. You know, they did this, they did this. And those are things that I scoop up. I have friends who write books I love. You know, there's like, I have my book coming out March 1st, but like there's five other books coming out this month that I've been like eagerly awaiting from different authors I know. Mm. So I also have the advantage. I am doing this full time at this point.
Yeah. That's you're reading more than just fiction, right?
I read everything. I read fiction. I have nonfiction. I read articles. I go through so much stuff all the time because everything interests me. If it's one of those things where like you look back and you think, man, if I'd known where I'd be now, I would have done so much more in college. I would have taken this random course and that random course. And I just want to know stuff. And I'm very lucky that I have a lot of very educated friends. I know, you know, doctors, I know genetic engineers, I know biochemists, and it's fun talking to them, but it's also fun. Like they're great for research. Yeah. I can call people up. I know a guy who's an expert on AI and computers. And he and I actually had a whole talk recently about, okay, do you know what a Turing test is? If you're familiar with the idea. A Turing test is this idea that was come up with a while back. Essentially, it's how do you tell if a computer is thinking or not?
Okay.
As opposed to, is it just giving you sort of pre-programmed responses? And I had this wild idea of, could you apply a Turing test to a ghost? So is the ghost actually conscious, or is the ghost just sort of repeating, echoing things from its life?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I know people that I get to sit and have conversations like that with. And
that's fantastic.
What's your family life like? You married? You got kids?
No kids. I'm not married, but I've been with the same partner now we're coming up on 18 years together.
And they're compatible with your writing habits. And
she's also a writer. And that is how we met. We met, weirdly enough, at the wake for a friend's cat. And we had been writing for, I mentioned, I wrote about the movie industry for a while. We both worked at the same magazine and we just never met each other.
Oh, wow.
So, cause you know, it's like you work for a magazine. I was always out in the field. She was usually in the office, and we were both writers, and we met, started talking to each other that night. And like the next day we were emailing each other like, hey, had a good time last night. And then, you know, here we are
coming up. All right. So tell us the quick premise of the book. So people that can pick it up, tell us a little bit about the book.
Quick premise of the book. Essentially, the book is about a former secret agent named Hector who has become very disillusioned with his job, dropped out, fell off the grid. And one day this little girl shows up, basically claiming to have been sent by one of Hector's old companions, friends. And Hector is immediately suspicious because this guy who she claims she talked to just a couple of days ago has been dead for 7 years. At which point she explains like, oh, thank God, you know, he was worried I'd be the one to have to break it to you. And what we come to find out is through a whole thing that is a big part of the book is the ghost of this dead secret agent is stuck in Natalie's head. And
oh, wow.
So Natalie can talk to him, hear him. He can tell her stuff. And basically he has sent Natalie to track down Hector to help her. And because the people who did this to her are trying to get her back.
See, I think that's really interesting. Have you thought of any of your books to be to utilize for a potential series or anything, or any of the, or a movie?
Who hasn't? I mean, I'd love it, obviously, if they did. Very, very funny story. When I started writing this, the person I was picturing as Hector was Pedro Pascal. And I got about 3-4 chapters into this and was like, yeah, oh my God, Pedro Pascal would be fantastic at this. And I could totally see him like protecting a little kid, being that kind of badass guy. And literally about a week after I said this, because I was like, and he's in that new Mandalorian show that's coming out. Yeah. And the Mandalorian came out. I'm like, God damn it. No, he's never going to do my movie. But I mean, that's the dream. I have some things that are kind of in the works right now, actually, that I don't think I can talk about yet.
I'm sure you can't talk about it yet. Yeah.
But it's the dream. You know that.
Hey, that's what's great is you're doing what you love and you're enjoying what it is and really seeing this whole process of people thinking they aren't reading books yet. They still are, and it's great. And more books are being written. And people need to definitely stay the course like you have. And then you got that opportunity as New York Times bestselling author. And then that will lead to more and more opportunities. All right, Dave, here's Dave's final question. Why we call him Caregiver Dave Nassani. Go ahead, Dave.
Excuse me. So I became a caregiver 25 years ago. My wife had a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And I instantly was thrown into this world. And I realized how hard it was. And I was burning out, grieving, all of that stuff. And we finally got it together. She reinvented herself and I reinvented myself. And now I help other caregivers stay alive because 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do. And many more become sicker than the ones they care for, eventually needing a caregiver of their own. So I started caregiverdave.com. It's an online support group. And I've appeared on 51 TV shows just talking about how to stay alive. You know, if you're a caregiver, put your mask on first. And I've spoken all over the country, all over the world, actually. My question to you, Peter, is how has caregiving affected your life, you know, with any parents, grandparents? I don't know.
I've been extremely fortunate that most of my family, we are disgustingly long lived. And I'm in this very weird position. This is the actual truth. I've only had like 4 relatives die in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
And I have some ancient relatives. I still have both my parents. I've lost one aunt and my grandmother, and that's pretty much been it on that side of my family. Mm. But
did it go quickly or was it a long, prolonged?
It was actually pretty quick for both of them. My aunt went quickly and with a lot of grace. My grandmother had complications from surgery and a week later was, but both times were very peaceful for them. So I've been very fortunate that way. But I think it's in this day and age, I think that's a wonderful thing you're doing because it is, I see looming crisis for a lot of us that I think a lot more people are one way or another going to be either needing a caregiver or finding themselves in that position of being a caregiver.
Do you know any caregivers who are going through this stuff?
Not at the moment. I used to. I actually had a friend in college, 2 friends who helped take care of another student who was in a wheelchair and needed assistance.
How'd they handle it?
They did fairly well. I think for everyone involved, it was the sort of thing that we were all young enough. I mean, I was friends with him too, that none of us considered it in any way, I guess. That I think, and you would probably have a much better perspective of this than I do. I think for some people, it's probably very, man, it sounds like such a cheap word, but just rough to go from having a full, you know, mobile, vibrant life and then suddenly finding out, oh, I'm bedridden now. Oh, right. I'm, you know, that besides the whatever has done this to you, just the idea that it has happened to you, that the change of life is just as probably destructive for some people as whatever disease, accident, condition has caused it.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Okay. So caregiverdave.com. Again, we can purchase your book. It's available March, right? March 5th releases?
March 1st.
March 1st.
Yep. Everywhere.
March everywhere. All right. Fantastic. All right. So March 1st everywhere. And do you have a website too?
I'm at peterkleins.com. I am Peter Kleins on Twitter, Peter Kleins on Instagram. Very easy to find.
No, you're fantastic. It was great talking to you. Good discussion. I guess, a course, how to become a New York Times bestselling author. We're finding out. No, that's not the best path. It's just stay the course. Keep going. And I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. All right. That was the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. Guys, take care. You can stop the recording, Dave.
Okay.